You are listening to Songezo Mabeqe on the Station of the Year.
Let's have a conversation with Senior Director of Law and Policy at Outright International, Ms. Neela Ghoshal. Now, when the Taliban had taken power in Afghanistan a year ago, many people fled due to sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Our next guest has released a report on the lived experiences of 22 queer Afghans as they share their stories of beatings, sexual assault, or arbitrary detention. Further, many of the participants were unaware that they were being pursued by the Ministry of Prevention of Vice and have had their loved ones being threatened. This report follows an initial report titled "Even If You Go to the Skies, We'll Find You" with the Human Rights Watch last year. Now, these are some serious things that are happening in other parts of the world, which for the most part in South Africa, we probably take all too for granted. So, Neela, thank you so much for being on air with us. I understand you're dialing in from New York. So thank you as well for taking time out of your working time to participate on our show. Welcome to SAFM, Neela.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about a mountain on my shoulder. I mean, these are the things that in many parts of the world one would think have been settled issues, even though it is just as true that there are many people for their sexual orientation who face persecution. In the instance of Afghanistan, it's as deep as this report would suggest. Share with us, please, among the critical findings of this report and the experiences, particularly of the 22 persons who were mainstream in this report.
Thank you. So we published this report on the 18-month mark of the Taliban having taken control of Afghanistan, going back to last August 15th of 2021. And since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan, Outright International, which is a global LGBTIQ advocacy organization, has been closely following what the impact has been on the lives of LGBTIQ people. Now, of course, we know that even before the Taliban took power, that Afghanistan was not an easy place to be LGBTIQ. The previous government had also criminalized consensual same-sex intimacy. We hadn't heard of many cases of people being actively pursued or prosecuted under those laws, but we did know that there were many cases in the past in which people were evicted from their homes, subjected to abuses from family members, from people who knew them well, and in some cases did seek to leave the country. When the Taliban took power in August 2021, the situation was completely turned on its head, and it became untenable to be an LGBTIQ person in Afghanistan. So first of all, from having a penal code that provided a prison sentence of a few years for consensual same-sex conduct, the Taliban has now announced that it's implementing Sharia to punish all kinds of sexual conduct, including between same-sex couples, with flogging, and under Sharia, this could even go as far as the death penalty, although we haven't seen any such cases yet. But public floggings for same-sex conduct have returned in Afghanistan. And apart from those public floggings of people who actually are convicted, ordinary LGBTIQ Afghans are facing persecution everywhere they turn, from low-level Taliban officials, local commanders, Taliban members and supporters, and sometimes their own family members who are linked to the Taliban. And this persecution has become increasingly systematic. So in the early days, there were some cases where someone was walking down the street and they appeared to be gender nonconforming, mm-hmm. and a Taliban commander would harass them, beat them, sometimes sexually assault them. And we've seen more and more cases in which Taliban officials seem to be looking for people, going to their houses, banging on the door, hunting them down. In one case, beating up a family member because a lesbian woman wasn't found in her home. And it's gotten to the point where there's really nowhere to hide. And abuse for everybody is something that is happening right now or really feels like it's just a matter of time.
For those who might not necessarily be too educated on the culture of the region, the Islamic religion or the culture of the Arab states. Perhaps let's go back from what you have said and perhaps start where perhaps I could have or should have started. Could you paint for us a picture of what has come to be an accepted norm, an accepted way of life, traditions and ways of living, including customs, in the context of how people have been expressing themselves or have been traditionally allowed to express themselves, so that we can get, if you will, the extremity of what you have now just outlined?
Yeah, I mean, I would start by saying that Islam is an extremely diverse, includes an extremely diverse set of interpretations of religion and culture, just like any other religion. And so I wouldn't want to attribute what's happening in Afghanistan to Islam. What we are seeing in Afghanistan and in some other countries in the region, but I think the Afghanistan situation is really particularly acute, is a politicized interpretation of Islam, selectively used against particular people in order to consolidate control. So for the Taliban, first of all, is policing everybody's sexuality, everybody's relationships, marriages, family structures. And as you mentioned in your introduction, there is a Ministry of Virtue and Vice, which was established to essentially promote what the Taliban sees as Islamic values, which is not, I mentioned that same-sex conduct was criminalized under the previous regime, but it's really day and night, right? And so I don't want to paint a picture of a
Sure.
culture that is universally harshly against LGBTIQ people. But what happens is that we now have a set of politicians in place who see value in kind of amping up the persecution of LGBTIQ people in order to further their own ends, right? And so the Taliban is marketing itself as a regime that can bring ideological purity, you know, kind of clean values and rigid structures and policing of values to Afghanistan, and that appeals to some people. And so, you know, what we see is that, for instance, family members of queer Afghans, there are cases in which family members are doing everything that they can to protect their queer family member. But someone else will come along from the family who's connected to the Taliban and expose that person, put them at risk. And so it's not uniform across the board persecution,
sure.
But because the Taliban has such power over the population, it becomes very difficult for family members to shelter people. So we've documented a couple cases, for instance, of lesbian women, or in one case, an intersex woman, whose family members felt that the only way to keep them safe was to marry them off to men. Now, in one case of a lesbian woman whose case we documented, once she was married off to a man who her parents hoped would, you know, her parents hoped that would protect her from public scrutiny, the husband discovered that she was a lesbian and proceeded to beat her every night. And so this woman is essentially, you know, imprisoned in her home and is beaten, and there's no way that she can leave or go anywhere safe. In another case of an intersex woman, this woman was being, it was rumored in her neighborhood that she was intersex, and she was being threatened by people who said they were going to turn her over to the Taliban. So again, the family married her off, believing that this would protect her. And when the husband discovered that he was intersex, he forced her to sleep in a cow shed instead of in the family home, and he constantly threatens to turn her over to the Taliban. So it's a combination of political authorities that are using persecution as a political strategy, and those family members and community members that carry extreme anti-LGBTIQ biases, knowing that now they can rely on the authorities to carry out harm against their family members and community members.
Let me ask this question just to get a sense as to how the communities of Afghanistan specifically might respond or engage or appreciate or accept the conversation about which we are having. And I preface this by asking a question that, for instance, takes me back to an interview between Christiane Amanpour and the then president of Kenya, Uhuru Kenyatta, when asking Kenyatta about the gay and lesbian question. Kenyatta responded and said that that is not a priority of the Kenyan people. They've got their norms and priorities of which the conversation of the rights of gay and lesbian communities was not a priority. And that has since been reiterated by his successor, President William Ruto now. I would understand that to have been a representation of the people. Would the people of Afghanistan speak in unison on this question and largely be in support of ultimately what the ministry, and this is the name of the Ministry for the Propagation of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice in Afghanistan, what would be the communities, the general consensus on the ground in Afghanistan be on this question?
Well, let's be clear that the people of Afghanistan are being terrorized by the Taliban, which doesn't mean that there aren't Taliban supporters among them, but nobody is free to express themselves. No one is free to express dissent. And women have been who are half the population have been shut out of the conversation altogether. And the persecution that we see of LGBTIQ people in Afghanistan, incidentally, is almost entirely at the hands of men, whether that's Taliban officials or whether it is male relatives, right? Lots of stories of uncles who are the threat within the family to a trans person or a lesbian or a gay person. And so the first problem is that there is no freedom for the people of Afghanistan to speak their minds. But what Outright has found across the board, and that is in countries ranging from Afghanistan to Kenya to Malaysia to Senegal, is that when I was paying close attention a few years ago when President Kenyatta made those remarks in Kenya, I was actually living in Kenya at the time. Kenyatta was trying to have it both ways, right? And saying the population didn't really care for or against, and so the government wasn't going to do anything about this situation. And what we typically find is that the priority of the population is not the persecution of LGBTIQ people. So as in Kenya, more so than in Kenya, Afghans right now are desperately hungry, and their priority is being fed. And their prior and the priority of women is being able to leave their houses and go to school and get jobs, right? And there's a huge amount of mobilization around these issues. And so the Taliban have no case to make that the priority of the public is punishment, including corporal punishment, flogging, and potentially even execution of LGBTIQ people. So you may have something of a culture of intolerance, which doesn't translate to a culture of violence. It's the authorities that are bringing violence to the fore. And then I think that all of this needs to be looked at in the context of countries' obligations under international law as well. Of course, the Taliban is stepping back from its obligations under international law, but Afghanistan has signed international human rights treaties, including the Convention Against Torture, and has committed to not torturing people on any grounds.
But that wouldn't have taken place.
The public would agree with.
But those instruments wouldn't have been signed or assented to by this regime. Do I understand that to be true? Because the previous regime might have done that, but the Taliban altogether, in the short time of 18 months that they have been there, I clearly do not understand them to carrying on those commitments, certainly if what we are talking about is anything to go by.
Yeah, they certainly don't. But technically, Afghanistan is still bound by international law. And I think one other important point is that Afghanistan is bound by the Rome Statute, which established the International Criminal Court. And the International Criminal Court has relaunched an investigation into Afghanistan in November of 2022 that it had previously launched many years ago and that had then gone dormant. And so the International Criminal Court will be looking into war crimes and crimes against humanity in Afghanistan, and Outright believes that many of the cases of persecution against LGBTIQ people could amount to crimes against humanity. And under the Rome Statute, there's a crime called gender persecution, which can include being persecuted for your gender or your sexual orientation or gender identity. And so when I think about cases like one of the cases we documented, a trans woman named Farzad, who was picked up by Taliban members, detained, and then gang raped. This is the kind of case that could fit into a categorization of crimes against humanity, and that even if it's difficult to see the possibility of justice right now, or even protection for LGBTIQ people, I think the door needs to be open to seeking justice in the longer term, including within the international criminal justice system for the types of crimes that are taking place.
Okay, now there are recommendations that the report addresses, and I would imagine, especially on the part of international obligations on the state of Afghanistan, this does call into conversation or into the fray that much more, not just its obligations that it on its own as a nation has assented to or agreed to have itself bound by, but from a recommendations perspective, what would the international community in this instance do to assist this point or clearly the social dilemma that is at variance with international human rights, established norms of international human rights?
Well, one of the main duty bearers in Afghanistan is the UN system, and the UN does have a mission, UNAMA, the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, on the ground. And UNAMA is both engaging with the population in order to provide protection and humanitarian assistance, and it's engaging with the government. And so we've issued a whole series of recommendations to UNAMA. What we found is that so far, UNAMA has been really carefully documenting crimes of gender-based violence against women. They've been documenting abuses that take place in prisons and detention settings, but they haven't yet looked at all into the situation of LGBTIQ people to even begin to understand how they could offer some kind of protection or take up some of these cases with the Taliban, because dialogue is in place. And so that's really our first recommendation, that the UN mission in Afghanistan needs to be engaging directly with the LGBTIQ community. Now, we know that this is not easy to do. It requires investing in having staff that are LGBTIQ friendly, and having interpreters that are LGBTIQ friendly, and in creating safe spaces for LGBTIQ people to come forward and share their stories. And that hasn't happened yet at UNAMA. So that's really one of our critical asks, that they bring on board those staff and create those spaces, so that just as they're documenting crimes of violence against women or violence against political prisoners, they can also document crimes against LGBTIQ people. And then what can they do with that information? Mm. One thing is to find ways to ensure that humanitarian support and assistance and protection, including access to shelter, is made available to LGBTIQ people who have humanitarian and protection needs. UNAMA also takes cases of human rights violations to the Taliban and discusses them with them. And while we know that the Taliban is not extremely receptive to human rights discourse, UNAMA is still in the country, and the Taliban has not said, we won't have these conversations. And the Taliban hasn't shut its doors to other representatives of the international community who are coming in and raising concerns. And that means that these cases can be on the table. They need to be presented as an issue that is of concern to the international community, because the Taliban does want legitimacy. Sure. So they're not going to play by all the rules, but they will play by some of the rules in order to gain some degree of legitimacy.
And that's where the entry point is, for sure.
Absolutely. And one thing that we constantly emphasize in the work of Outright and other organizations that work on LGBTIQ rights is that we're not calling for any new or special rights. What we're calling for are things like the right to be free from torture, the right to bodily integrity, to pertain to everybody. And so that's the way that I would suggest having that conversation with the Taliban, that arbitrarily arresting people at checkpoints for any reason is unacceptable, and dragging people into checkpoints, beating them and sexually assaulting them is unacceptable. And so those are conversations that I think you can begin to have. I also, another recommendation that we made is for donors who are funding humanitarian assistance in Afghanistan.
I have a minute left with you, so please wrap up with that point.
Sure. Okay. To make sure that that humanitarian assistance does reach LGBTIQ people, they have specific vulnerabilities, including restrictions on freedom of movement, where if you're visibly queer, getting to a place where you can access food aid is challenging, right? So again, there's the need to work with LGBTIQ communities to get food aid and other support to LGBTIQ people wherever they are.
Fantastic. Neela, thank you so much for your time. We certainly do appreciate that. And thank you for taking the time to engage us here all the way from South Africa. And I think the international advocacy work around this, not just for Afghanistan, but for global communities who face similar persecutions elsewhere, perhaps just not as documented, it is important nonetheless for this conversation to have taken place. And we appreciate you coming on.